Good evening, everyone. Broadcasting live, July 5th. Here to review, discuss, to unravel the Dhamma. Today we have a rather odd sort of quote. Doesn't seem to me to be all that of an essential quote. It talks about associating with good people. And I don't think it's quite a good translation. The Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation seems more reasonable to me. It says a person who should be associated with, to be followed, to be served. What kind of a person should you follow? The sutta starts off by talking about those who should be looked upon with disgust and not associated with. So if someone is immoral or of bad character, impure, of suspect behavior, such a person one should not follow. Because even if one doesn't take their example, this is how Bhikkhu Bodhi says it, doesn't take their example, still people will assume the worst. And you will be branded, tarred, what do they say, tarred with the same brush, something like that. People will think, oh, you must be like that person that you follow. Among other things, I mean, there's lots of trouble that surrounds people who do bad things. So sometimes we remain friends and we, out of loyalty, think that we should stick with people who are in a bad way for reasons other than their behavior. And regardless of whether you agree with that, there's a certain amount of trouble that follows from associating with corrupt individuals, people who are immoral, impure, they do bad things. Such a person, in the end, such people should be avoided if possible. There's lots of reasons, and the Buddha gives one of the, I guess the most obvious is the bad reputation. And it makes it hard to live your life because no one wants to be around you all of a sudden because they know who your friends are. And there's another type of person who should be looked upon with equanimity, but also not associated with. So the first type of person should be looked upon with disgust. Chikuchitabo. To be shunned. Maybe not looked upon with disgust. Should be shunned. The second type of person should be seen with equanimity, but also not associated with. This is a person who, though they may not do bad things, say bad things, they still, well, they don't do evil deeds, but they still have evil mind states. So they're prone to anger. If they're slightly criticized, they lose their temper and become irritable, hostile, and stubborn. They display irritation, hatred, and bitterness. Just as a festering sore, if struck by a stick or a shard, will discharge even more matter, so too. Or just as a firebrand will sizzle and crack, just as a pit of feces, if struck by a stick, will become even more foul-smelling. So, these sort of people, you best just leave them alone. You don't, they're not identifiably evil in terms of giving you a bad reputation or getting you caught up in evil deeds, or even worse, encouraging you yourself to engage in evil deeds. But there's a certain nastiness for people who get angry and for people who are greedy. These sort of people, you should still try to keep your distance, not because of the explicit evil, but because of the more not still explicit, but the more inner corruption that's going to, if you poke it with a stick, it smells even worse. If you get involved with such people, there's always conflict, there's always trouble. These sort of people are best treated like a pile of crap. It's okay as long as you don't touch it, poke it with a stick or step in it or something. But then there's such a person who should be associated with, followed and served. This is what the quote says: if someone is virtuous and of good character, you should hang out with them. This is the sort of person you should stick around with. I think it's just curious. Well, it's just a reflection of the other one, but it's still kind of curious that it's not the only reason. But he says, even if you don't do follow the example and become a good person yourself, people will spread give a good reputation. Oh yes, this person has good friends. This person has good companions. I mean, I think it's a little bit superficial to say, but there's something a little more to it than that. It's a sign of good judgment, but I think more importantly, it's a doorway. You know, even if you don't become a good person by associating with good people, there's always the option, the opportunity. You know, the sort of superficial benefits of having people say good things about you, and even being free from any of the dangers or the troubles that come from associating with corrupt people. But all that's fairly superficial. Obviously more important is, even if you don't pick up their habits immediately, the opportunity to pick up good habits and the potential to become a better person is of course, is greatly improved when you hang out with good people. So you may not be, there's no need to feel inferior or unworthy or so on. You should seek out good people with the thought that I will become a better person myself. Anyway, it's a fairly simple quote. Not much to say about that. But there's so much to say about friendship, you know, about hanging out with good people, being around good people. Especially when you're doing something so personal as meditation, so much to do with the individual. It's important you associate with good individuals who are a good example, people who we'd like to become more similar to, people who are engaged in activities that we're attempting to cultivate ourselves. So when you see other people meditating, it's more likely that you're going to meditate yourself. More importantly, the good qualities of such a person are more likely to rub off and provide a good example, sort of a road sign, something to look for when you're on the path to start becoming more like these people, as you see the goodness in them. There's a great benefit for being around good people. It's great to come to a meditation center. We've got lots of people coming this year. That's great. We've got people signing up for courses all the way through October so far. It's really, really great to see such interest. So, we're still looking for a steward. If there's anybody out there who would like to come and stay for a longer period, they've had some people. There's one person from Israel who mentioned staying long term, so maybe that'll work out. I don't know. I'm coming in September, I think. But if anyone would like to talk about that and would be interested in helping out around here for months or some longer period of time, that'd be great. Lots of stuff going on. So, any questions? Does meditating during an activity count as a formal practice? Would it be all right to log it as a time spent in meditation? Yeah, I mean, there's no, it's not like we're going to check on you as to how you meditated or so on. But I don't quite understand what you're saying. During an activity, I don't understand what you mean by activity. Is there a shared responsibility impact for one another's lives other than just one's own responsibility, collective responsibility? Not really, but there's a sense of rightness. If you don't help other people when given the opportunity, there's a sense of tension involved. And to some extent, you in order to stay at peace, you have to do some things to benefit others. If you are cold and ignore the benefit to others, it can be a hindrance to your practice. But no, we're not responsible for other people's well-being, not directly. We just have certain duties that, as individuals, it's proper to perform. Or, you know, it's a part of right, what's right. You know, the right action for the individual often involves helping others. You're looking for disciples for your center, other monks or people seeking to become monks. I would be interested in being a steward. What would be the setup? Well, the setup is that you'd have to do about a month of meditation with us first, and then you just stay on after that. But it would involve doing some of the things that intensive meditators, beginner meditators anyway, aren't able to do, like some amount of cleaning and organizing and caring for the monastery and helping me out with whatever I need. I mean, we had someone recently who had a car, which was great, so I could drive. He could drive me places, but that's not entirely necessary. But it would be a plus. Yeah, some cooking maybe, but not really. Some things to do with, you know, we need a local person to organize things that I can't organize. Things with money and buying basic supplies for the monastery. There's not a lot to do, but there are things to be done. It would help to have a steward. I think part of it was the organization wanted someone who would cook for me, because right now I'm going to the restaurant and taking advantage of people's generosity in offering gift cards for certain restaurants, but it's quite expensive, so it's not exactly it's not efficient or economical to be doing that. It would make more sense to somehow do cooking at the monastery. Uh, But as far as becoming a monk, I'm shying away from that. But you know, a long-term meditator, the option's certainly open. But we're not really advertising it because it's too easy to miss the point. So ordaining should be a part of your meditation practice. It shouldn't be anything separate. If you want to meditate long-term, well, becoming a monk means that allowing you to do that. That's all. But calling someone's behavior disgusting, is that not judging? Yeah, I mean, judging is not always bad. Discerning. I mean, disgusting is probably the wrong word. And it's just a word, but if you're actually disgusted by something, obviously that is a disliking of it or aversion towards it. But there's we use disgust in a sort of a, it's just a word in regards to this sort of a different kind of repulsion in the sense of the inability to do it through wisdom, the inability to get involved with something out of a knowledge that it's bad, that it's wrong, that it leads to suffering, basically. So if you know something leads to suffering, it's like the more you know, the harder it is for you to engage in it. And when the potential to engage with people, for example, who are doing bad things arises, when the opportunity arises, there's a certain recoiling that doesn't have anything to do necessarily with aversion, but it's based on a knowledge that that's not the way to do things. Getting involved with that person is not beneficial. I clean a bathroom, I do it as mindfully as possible. Right. No, that's not quite what we're looking for. I mean, that's great. That's awesome if you're able to do it. But we're really looking for formal meditation practice. That's what's meant here. We do actually do formal walking and sitting. Amazed that you do not cook your own food. I meditate while preparing food as part of my practice. Monks aren't allowed to keep food. It's part of a practice of renunciation as a lifestyle. We don't keep food, cook food. We can't eat anything unless it's given to us. Yeah, I mean, preparing your own food has its own problems because of the ability to choose these sort of the mental activity involved with choosing your own food and thinking about what food you're going to eat and to some extent obsessing over the health and so on of it. There's something great about just having to eat whatever is being offered. And moreover, sort of the scraps that you get by going through the village, that's the greatest. So that's sort of the model is for monks to go walking through the village for scraps of alms, whatever people are willing to give as charity. Because in India it was a big thing to give food to recluses, to religious people. They would get enough to survive, and that was it. You avoid a lot of the trouble of having to cook food and the potential distraction involved in storing and cooking and having a kitchen in the first place. So monks aren't allowed to. Being a monk is on a different level. Of course, for meditators, cooking your own food is fine. There's just a sense that it's an unwarranted distraction. If you're able to be free from that, you can focus more on a deep meditation. It's too easy to get distracted. Sure, you can be mindful cooking. It's great. But during a meditation course, much better not to have to cook. It's too much of a distraction. Especially for a beginner meditator. lots of things the Buddha said, don't get involved in, don't get caught up in work, don't get caught up in sleep, don't get caught up in talk, don't get caught up in socializing, don't get caught up in eating. And these things get in the way of your practice. All right. So unfortunately, I don't think our quote was all that pithy tonight. And a few questions. Doesn't look like there's any more. If you have any more questions, I'll be here again tomorrow. Broadcasting a little bit every day. So thank you all for tuning in. Keep up the good work.